Let's go both ways. Is there an age before which the rod is not effective? And is there an age past which it's no longer effective? The answer to the first is yes. If the child isn't to the point where they can interpret you rightly, then you have to wait. I disciplined one of my kids with a spanking at 6 months. It took me about 3 to 4 hours to calm him down afterwards. I mean, I felt like a class A heel. You ever had him heave like that? Wow. I say, Dad, I don't believe you. I don't believe you did that. So I don't believe it now either, but well, what do I do? So you're looking for that, and each child personality is different. Some of them are coming into that a little bit earlier than others, and you're asking God for wisdom, but it wasn't unrepairable damage. I learned to be more careful. But the same is true otherwise. I mentioned that when children are young, they don't abstract very well. So they're learning, I do this and bang. And also that the spanking is very merciful in that it's not open-ended forever. You know, you take a two-year-old and say, you are grounded for this month. That's forever, maybe longer. I mean, they just can't conceive of that. They are on the outs with you for who knows how long. It's overwhelming to them. The spanking occurs and it's over with. It's very merciful when it's done correctly. Okay? Now, when a child hits somewhere around 11 or so, they begin to go from this very concrete line of thinking to abstracting. They begin to conceptualize a lot. They begin to start to put things together. And as a parent, you're moving away from the rod and into rebuke and to other consequences. You say, well, what exact age is that? I don't know, but it's right around here. Okay, you're going to have to find that. Eventually, you're going to let go of them, and you aren't going to do anything to them. Okay? So if you run by power of force from, say, 1 year of age to 18 years of age, and that's the only way that you've maintained the discipline, and the force hand is taken off, you're going to go wild. Guess where it's going to happen? It's going to happen in college, out of your reach. Much better to have them rebel at home and deal with it. Okay? You want to build a whole different platform where their desire to be in fellowship with you is deeper than the pain factor, and the rod starts dropping out of the picture. We've done that between age 11 and 13.
Well, my situation is that stepson has not been with us. And he has not had the rod growing up as a child. So would that be an exception to?
Yeah, you may well want to use it. It takes a lot of special wisdom. One, as soon as you say, well, that child is now living with us, you think, well, biblically, what does that mean? I got to start pouring in time like this kid has never had. I mean, I need one-on-one time, because if I lay on the heavy discipline right off, he has zero base to interpret it with. Just what I thought. I came here and you beat me. Do you see what I mean? So you're working your way into that, and then quickly working your way out of that, if possible. You can see it's not the situation that God wants. God wanted that fellow to have it at the beginning. So you say, well, I may need that, but boy, how do we engineer our time schedule to pour in what's missing? We got to do it. How do we do that? Go for it. Any other questions? Yes?
The difference in problems between the poor and the simple, could you explain that a bit?
Yes. The simple person really is gullible. The fool is hardened. The fool regularly does not listen. The fool is a hothead. You answer a fool according to his folly and you're dead meat, and you answer a fool according to wisdom and you're dead meat from their perspective. They won't accept correction either way. Okay? That's not true with a simple person. A simple person has the ability to respond to correction. Now, the difficulty is you can't stay stationary. You're moving from simpleness to either being wise or to being a fool. Okay? And the direction we as parents want to work that in is we want to move them towards being wise, where they understand these great truths. Yes?
I have a 7-year-old daughter who is a real whiner and tries to be nuts and swearing.
What's the age again?
7.
First question to ask again. I'm going to sound repetitive on this. First question to ask again, do they know that I love them? Do they know that I delight in them? What do I do? What do we do together where they really sense that I appreciate them with? So always go through that as a checkoff list. If you find out that your spank rate density goes up, you know what I'm talking about? It's a good engineering term. Number of spankings per unit of time. If you find out they're clustered, very often it means there's a time deficiency in there on your part. But if you've addressed that, then you start working towards discipline that helps them. And you've got to be a bit creative. Spanking may not be the only answer. There may be taking other things away that they really like and say, well, can't do that. Part of it may be a little bit personality oriented, which means you're going to have to be sensitive to their ability. For example, let me pick up a parallel. Let's suppose you have a young child, and instead of being issued with a 12-volt battery, they were issued with a 36-volt battery. Our term for that is hyperkinetic, hyperactive. Now let's suppose I sit them in their high chair and I say, you stay still. Okay? Pretty soon they're out of, spank, spank. No. You've got to know what their abilities are. You can't be manipulated by them to believe that they don't have the abilities that they do have, but you do have to find out what your child is capable of. I've seen some real whiners in my day, too. Part of it was lack of affection and attention. The other part is the parents put up with it too much. So start disciplining for that and be careful. What you're assessing quickly is, God, I want to know what their abilities are. Some are going to be more whiny than others. And some just seem to have the right tone rate. You know what I mean? They're, well, he's just great. And beyond that, they have mannerisms that drive you up the wall. Don't they? I was doing devotions with one of my girls, and I can remember she has to curl my hair. And you understand my problem in that, see. One, I ain't got enough that's worth curling. It just drove me up a wall. I said, well, Doug, you got your choice. You can either correct that, and it's not a moral issue, right? There's no verse that says, thou shalt not curl your dad's hair. So I say, well, I've got my choice. I can make devotion times a kind of a constant confrontation and miserable, or I can just ask God for grace to help me ignore it. And the latter was the way to go. Made a difference. By the way, get into some good Christian reading for your children. Start them young. There's tons of benefits from them. Get them on the lap. You can have them on your lap, close to you, where they can learn the things of God. That's a good bonding element. They learn. Their ability to memorize is phenomenal. It really is. We were doing devotions with one and wondering whether we should start more seriously with the other. And while I was doing devotions with the other one was doing flip-flop, off the bed, on the bed. Finally, I asked them a question directly, and they recited the whole thing we were working with. And my assumption up to that point is they hadn't gotten anything. I was really wrong about that. So they have a real capacity of picking it up. Again, your child's attention span is going to vary. When you get them real young, attention span may be at least 2 minutes. Okay, but that's an important 2 minutes. It's going to build from there. You're going to get, and you want to get them into good material. Get a Bible story book with pictures when you start. Not necessarily pictures of God or Jesus, since you don't have any real pictures of God and the ones of Jesus are generally a distortion. Ones that Francis Hook done are more appealing to me than the kind of long-haired, marijuana-eyed ones that I hope I haven't. It's always hit me that way. This guy looks like he's on marijuana. But you want to get them thinking God created the heavens and the earth. All that you see is from God. And you're graduating into stuff where you can read stories. The initial Arch books were real good. Some of them that went past those initial printings started to get more speculative. There were things in there that really weren't from the scriptural stories. You know what I'm talking about? They added to the story, kind of spiced it up a bit. We tried to steer a little bit away from that. As time got the picture Bible was real helpful. The ones that are done in a kind of a cartoon format. Gasp, did I say that? Really, kids loved them. And they ate, and they got the gist of the Bible stories within that pretty well. We moved into some of Patricia St. John's writings. Are you familiar with her? Marvelous writer. There's not a lot of good writers to be had that really put out quality literature, but Patricia St. John is wonderful. Treasures in the Snow, Secret of Pheasant Cottage, Star of Light, Roger, some others. She really works you through some great things, and she doesn't do it in a stereotypical way.
Did you say Patricia?
Patricia.
Patricia.
Patricia St. John. Okay, well worth having. They're good for adults, too, by the way. It's part of the characteristic of really good Christian literature. Chronicles of Narnia. Great. They're really great.
These line storybooks, very close to the text, and good artwork and good story.
Okay, we have some of those back there. But learn to read with your children. Another idea for devotions is let them act it out. They love that. Our kids just ate that up. Dad, can we act out the one for today? Well, I don't know. I want to. Oh, please. We get through it. You know, it takes longer that way. They take 15, 20 minutes, pull bed sheets and all the other kind of stuff, bring it down to the living room. Oh, they're going to do that, and then they put on them. We'd ask them questions, but they were participating in it. It's kind of a hands-on kind of thing, and see if they interpreted it correctly. It was really quite good. And then, of course, they wanted to do a second one and a third one. We had to blow the whistle on the night activities, but it's important that they do that. Sometimes you need to kick back and just have plain old unmitigated fun, not just long-term joy stuff. We had Bible quiz shows. Now, they can't have Bible quiz shows all the time or you'd be grossly miscommunicating. But in terms of picking up Bible trivia, it's fantastic what that will do. They start to learn and want to learn things which, although they're not in their value context now, are going to be put in a value context later because they'll remember the gist of these major stories and characters and know where to find them if they need to. What else? Other questions? Dot?
Yeah, I run into the problem sometimes that I have is, well, I've got three kids, the oldest one is six. My husband ends up working, occasionally works long hours. Now, of course, that tends to blow up my schedule, and I am very schedule-oriented. But then my kids, by the end of the day, are tired of listening to me.
Yes.
You know, and I'm, you know, you work, and you try to be real consistent and go through it. But, of course, by 6 o'clock, and puppy's not home, I'm tired, and they know which box to push.
Yes.
And it's like, you know, what difference or what else you do? And I get tired of that old, as you said, the spanking gets too high with the time up.
Yeah, part of it is learning to be consistent and blow the whistle earlier. And the other is thank God for somebody to relieve the watch.
Yes.
Okay? I mean, that is, if you pick this up right and you have a husband-wife relationship like you need to, you will appreciate each other so deeply. I mean, you've got to have a heart for single parents in this. The job is just staggering. They need all the help from the church that they can get. They need new models to step in and take part. And the church ought to have a heart for that and know how to do that. But one, just say, God, please. please have Dean come home quick.
One word and it's instant obedience.
Yeah?
Why could they do that to me?
Well, they did at the beginning of the day. But that's so long in past history that it's fading. And the same thing happens with Dad, too. I mean, like you said, you are on the cutting edge of technology. I mean, you aren't in some of the highly theoretical stuff. I mean, the rubber's pounding the road constantly, and you are right there in the midst of it. But thank God for relief. Thank God you can have somebody to kind of take you out of that for a little while. And you need to take advantage of that. There are sometimes, even when you're both there, that one of you isn't fit to discipline. Does that ring any bells? I remember sometime a few years back, I was so angry. I mean, I was really hot. I knew that if I did any discipline from that kind of framework, it was going to be wrong. Now, I'm a pastor, and you're saying, well, they're not supposed to get that angry. But I was. I said, honey, you got this one. I'll pray for you. But right now, me and God got some serious talking to do. He's got to put me back into some kind of decent shape or we're in real trouble. Yes?
Is there any difference with how the husband and the wife deal with the children, since the husband does have kind of a different...
There is a little bit of difference in that, one, the personality is different, and there's a complementary structure. Okay? It wasn't Adam and Eve, it wasn't Adam and Steve, it was Adam and Eve. So God didn't bring another man to fill in that, he brought a woman. And you'll find that a woman's outlook is different from a man's. It really is. And the both are really a blessed requirement of that. So there is some difference. However, you want to make sure that you're consistent in the way that you approach it. You want to make sure that you and your husband are in harmony about your approach. Don't ever undercut one another in the presence of the kids. Don't undercut one another ever, but do talk them out. Yes?
I'm going to go back a little bit to the personality of a child. I have a child who is, what she'll do is she'll look at the situation, know what the consequences are, and think, I'll take the consequences, go through it, and come for the consequences. And I mean, I'm not sure how to change the discipline when she's already knows that she deserves the discipline, is willing to take it because it was worth it.
Okay, well, your goal is to make it not worth it, and it has to be upped to those stakes. Remember that your goal is to reach the point where they have dealt with the issue and don't want consequences over right behavior. So make sure it gets up to the appropriate value. And it's not just the pain level, because again, children vary. Typically for boys, they'll hit a certain age where they can hack it. I got to that point. One day, my mom took a yardstick and snapped it in three pieces over me. It wasn't bad at all. And then she took the spoon. And now those have a better blow perspective than the yardstick, and she broke her good spoon, and I laughed. And she was not real excited about the fact that I laughed, and so she threw the trump card on the table. When your dad gets home, that quit my laughing right there. Because I think it needs commitment like that. It was going to be either my dad or me. One of us wasn't going to make it. He would rather die than fail in that, and I knew it. Okay? Furthermore, I did not want my dad to die. I mean, I don't know about others, but I got to the point of calculating it. I can outrun my dad. I can outswim him now. I know that. I can run faster than him. I know that. In terms of endurance, I can beat him, but if I get close up, I am dead meat. Okay? That really wasn't what held me back. Dad had already had a heart attack. And I thought, well, Dad's so committed to this that if I really got into it, he would lay his life on the line to discipline me. And I don't want to see that happen to Dad. I would submit to anything. That's where you want to get to. Another thought that I have is your children, this is an important thing I didn't mention the other night, your children need some arena where they can say what's in their heart even though you dislike it strongly. They need some avenue where they can tell you what's going on in your heart and you don't overreact. Have you ever read the Psalms? You ever hear some of the things the psalmist said to God? God, where are you? Where are you? I've been praying day and night for weeks and you're gone. You don't care. Is that true? No. How do you think God thinks about that? Not very well, but he did let him say that to him in some context. Do you have any context where the kid can empty their heart on you? If you don't, you're just bottling them up. Christian discipline is not to bottle it up so as soon as they leave your home, they can just explode. You want some arena where they can say these awful things and you absorb it. Okay? Another really helpful point is that as they start to get older, some of the things they're saying are not really what they believe. They're trying to architect, they're trying to define their identity. And part of the way they do that is they step out to be different from you. They haven't thought what that means yet, but they just want to know that they are different from you. We were riding together, one of my daughters and I, in a car, and she was in high school situation. One of her high school friends was engaged to a college student to be married, and I said, what do you think about that? She said, I think that's fine. My heart went and I thought, well, should I say something about it now? You know, I was talking to God about it, and the gist I got was, keep your mouth shut. I had a herniated jaw muscle. God, can I please say something? No. Now's not the time. Later on, I don't remember whether we were in the car also, I think probably we were, but was on the way back from what we were going to. I said, when you said that before, did you say it because you really believe that or to be different from me? She said, to be different from you. I said, okay. But you notice if you do some of this, you get them talking to you, they have things in their heart. There are things that would be much better if, even though they're in their heart, they could bring it before you and deal with it rather than you fly off the deep end in overreaction. Okay? Please note that. If you want to reference, say, Book of Psalms, 1 through 150. Okay? Any other questions? Yes?
I have a 7-year-old with a choleric personality.
Uh-huh.
And you were talking about what the clerics, this denial that they have. I'm a single parent, and she's big for her age. She's 7, looks like she's 9 or 10.
Uh-huh.
And when I confront her with an issue like lying, or, you know, she's just really brash sometimes to others, you know. Not so much to me anymore, but...
Good, you're making progress then.
Yeah, well, we went about that. But with her, she's so big, yet she's so young. And I'm 5'2", I can't really subdue her. But the question that I have, well, I can, you know, but it's, I really hate doing that. Because I always feel so bad, and that's not my style of relating to children.
Uh-huh.
And I guess my question was, how do you get them to come out of that denial? You know that, like, it wasn't nice for you to hit that person because what, it doesn't matter what they said. I don't want you smacking other kids around because she's so big.
Uh-huh.
And I told her, you know, I couldn't think of any scripture for it, but I told her it makes you look like a bully, even if that child was older than you.
Uh-huh.
No, Mom, you know, but, you know, and it's the same thing with other stuff with lying. You know, she has a real hard time admitting when she's wrong. And so one day, talk about going round and round. We literally went round and round. And I was trying to get her to admit that what she said was wrong, And there was screaming on my part, screaming on her part.
Okay, that I can pick up. That particular means of approach of yours is too forceful. Even where you have a good husband-wife relationship where somebody loves you and they confront you for doing wrong, Mary Lou says, Doug, you were really wrong on this. Immediately I say, yes, honey, you're right again. I was wrong. Is that what I say?
No.
That is not what I say. What do I say? Let me absorb it. Let me sort it through. I don't know whether I agree with you. The idea is not to overpressure them for the moment. The idea is to put them into an environment where they can work it over. So don't insist that they change their statement of position when they're in the heavy confrontation. Set them aside from that and let them work through it, that only they're going to have to come through with it or the discipline is not over. Okay? Do catch that. But it isn't, you know, I'm going to whip you into my position. Because what they're doing is they're digging in and say, no, you're not. There you're working with power more than allowing the spiritual aspects to work through. So you have to insist that they're going to have to come to grips with that or discipline isn't going to be over. But you're not trying to get them to say it right now. If that's the case, then you are the author of repentance, and none of us here are.
So you mean like give them instructions to sit on their bed or lay down or whatever they want to, but stay in that place and think about it?
Yeah.
Until they can.
Again, it depends on their age. For young kids, you can sit them on the couch for 20 minutes. I mean, that's nearly eternity. Sometimes we just let them go up to their room. But all the other fun things are out. I mean, until it gets dealt with, there is no playing with friends. There is no all of these other things until they've worked it through, until they're ready to come down and talk to it. And I said the test of it is whether you're back in fellowship with me. If you're not, discipline isn't over. So that's part of what you can do. You probably will have to use more force than your personality likes. And I don't know, you can...
I hear the kids go through stages, you know, and I'm thinking, well, if this stage is getting over with, I don't know what's the next stage. And I'll be honest with you, with this girl, I dread teenagehood, really, because I just became a Christian a year ago, and I haven't done a lot of things right.
Well, thank God, because right now you have the means with your heart to seek correction, to accept wisdom, ask for help from the fellowship as much as you can. If you're open to correction, there's so much that's yours. If you know, and not everybody's correction is helpful. I'm sure you know that. But if you can establish a relationship, pick out your godly parents. Think through the congregation that you're in and say, who are those that are really godly? I mean, their kids have come out godly. It's not just those with an iron fist whose kids are absolutely, you say jump and they say how high on the way up. That's probably not good parenting. It's going to have bad ramifications later on. Find out the ones who, as they get past the authority of the family, are still going well. Latch on to them and say, there's a lot I don't know. I mean, I didn't have modeling like that in my own home, and my home's divided, and I need as much as I can, as fast as I can get it. Adopt those people into your life. Figure out how to do that. That's well worth it. And this is the stuff you meditate on in your quiet times. It isn't just stuff you see. It's the kind of stuff you kind of ponder before God. As Mary pondered certain things in her heart, only you want to ponder these things. Turn them over and say, okay, God, what does this mean to me? Because here's where my child in the spectrum, I see her being here. What's the best that I can do for her? Pray. things do change. We had one opportunity where, you ever had a kid that's out of sorts all day and you can't quite discipline them? Because it isn't clearly wrong in their sight. They just, if you discipline them, they... children, but that you've communicated to them. I think we can step back a little bit. Mary Lou would reach over and squeeze my hand.
Okay. And that doesn't, your kids don't recognize that and see it as undercutting.
They know that I respect her enough. Okay. This mutual relationship between one another that you build up is so key. Mary Lou is my helper. She knows she's my helper. I know she's my helper, and my kids know that she's my helper. Okay? So if she needs to get my attention for something, that's not undermining my authority. That is part of my authority. That's the base that it comes from. So, one, you want to develop it. You also want to be incredibly thankful for that. I mean, you just need to encourage each other with all that you have. Raising children is a big, big task. And you say, well, how long does it take? Well, you're dealing with 20, 22 years, and sometimes it goes past that. Need all the help you can get.
I don't know how to explain this, but my husband is, as you know, extremely calm. Mm-hmm. He just rarely gets angry mm-hmm. in any way, shape, or form. And I am extremely emotional and do everything with my, you know, with my whole, what, uh-huh. with much enthusiasm. And his approach to discipline is much...
much more level.
Yeah, he's so much more calm all the time. And discipline is one of those too.
Thank God.
Yeah.
Thank God for that. Don't overlook the other, because it's your emotion that adds different tones to the whole home situation. If both of you were exactly like your husband, your home would really be flat. Okay? So, you know, you may just think, oh, my husband does everything right. You know? It's not the case. Not the case. Any others? Let's close in prayer. Father, thank you for our time together. I do pray that I was a blessing to those here. Help them to realize that all my four children are not fully grown, and I'm in the midst of it too. Help us to pray for one another, to encourage one another, to use the full resources within our marriage and the church to carry out this precious task that you've assigned to us. In Jesus' name, amen.